Terry Stone.
Hi. This subject really fascinates me, and I keep to look back at what's the root. Where does it... How does this stuff fit together, and how is our responsibility in this? And I think that the format that we're doing today in having people discuss this after the program is probably the crux of the whole thing. When I'm at home, I have two dogs, and if one of my dogs is acting up and prancing around and playing and just kind of hamming it up for us, the other dog doesn't watch him. The other dog doesn't care. And I realize that we are the only people who will watch others of our kind do things, that we are spectators. And in being spectators, we give the power to the, quote, media because we want somebody else to do it for us and then to feed it to us. We want somebody else to be responsible for what the media is that we get in. We are giving the power to the media by being spectators, and that what this forum here and what this format is doing is going to force us to stop being spectators. And I think one of the reasons that we have become spectators is because school does not teach us how to think critically, and our society, our family structure doesn't teach us how to argue, and how to argue peaceably, and how to argue with love, and to make a point and back away. We're almost trained to think in simplistic tones. We're trained to think of the quick wit, the quick jab, and then go on to the next. This is just what we need. We need to have people come together and talk to each other. When people talking to each other is more entertaining and more invigorating and more exciting than listening to somebody on the radio, being the spectator, when we are so invigorated to go back to another town hall and talk to each other, and then go from that to find out the information that we need so we can bring it back to another town hall because we're having such a great time talking to each other. But we are trained not to talk about religion, sex, politics, or money. Those are the four most important things in our lives. And we are always told, don't bring them up. We need to learn how to talk to each other, how to talk from the heart, how to talk about things that really matter to each other, and make talking to each other more important than watching somebody else talk to us. Thank you.
And next we have Bill Brady.
Evening, everyone. Just like to add to what the initial speaker said, undoubtedly there's a lot of bias in the media, and he mentioned some of the dynamics behind it, but there's another dynamic which I feel is extremely important, and that is fear. Even people who might want to say one thing feel they have to say something else because of the paranoid patriotism that a patriotic fervor that's been built up since September the 11th. And people feel they ought to be patriotic, even if it's not really what they feel inside. And of course, a lot of that is all fed by misinformation or lack of information, which doesn't give them the information to clearly make their point known or appreciated. And I think it's a very important point. Fear obviously dominates much of what we do in our daily life, and certainly in the media is no different. Thank you.
Next we have Don Collison.
Yeah, I think there's something that many of us can do, which perhaps we don't, and that is to support some of the alternative medium. I don't know how many of you subscribe to something, but maybe it's a rather select group, so probably maybe you all do. But I think if people would subscribe to the Progressive, Z is pretty hard read, but Jim Hightower's newsletter, The Lowdown, Counterpunch, or something, in preference to perhaps picking up at the newsstand, and I don't want to insult anybody, but People, or I don't even know the names of the damn things, but all of the mass media, I think most people do buy some printed materials, and I think that if you have a choice, one, it'd be better for you or the person buying, and certainly it would help because most of these relatively progressive, some very progressive, alternative things operate on a real shoestring and they're constantly needing money. Another thing I think that is not emphasized very much is the fact that our public libraries, where you can go read people easily, frequently do not carry even Harper's or the Atlantic. I mean, that's about as far as they get. I can't recall a local library I've seen that has the Nation in it. I've never seen the Progressive in a public library, or Z. And I think that's something that some of us could and should do something about. And I think, again, that you don't have to necessarily give them a subscription, but if you ask enough times and enough libraries to have some alternative to the National Review, Fortune, Time, I guess Life is still printed, is it? I don't know. The Reader's Digest and all of this other garbage. I mean, some of them have immense numbers of periodicals, but they don't have much substance to them. So I think those are two things we can do. It is obvious, I think, to all of us anyway, that the media is extremely biased. And I think Nick's suggestion about writing to them is good. And I think something that you can probably point out is their use of language, which I don't think has been particularly mentioned here, but not to tread on too many toes. But Palestinians are always gunmen, and Israelis are soldiers or something to the effect. The Iraqis, and like people, are always terrorists, and this is so well known I hate to even mention it's cliched. The people that we like, or the administration likes, I should say, are freedom fighters and so forth. So I think there's a lot we can do and we should do ourselves. The free press isn't free, and very few of us, or none of us, I think, are able to start a magazine or start a newspaper. There's one other thing that occurs to me. There is, those of you who get cable, the prices on it are such that I think nowadays you can get satellite for about the same. And there is a free speech, I think they call it free speech TV, which will get you onto a satellite. I think it's through Deep Dish, if I remember. But and then you can get Amy Goodman, you know, live in color on your TV set in the morning, along with those she interviews in her firehouse studio and so forth. So those are just three suggestions. Otherwise, yeah, fairness and accuracy in media in reporting, and their magazine extra is extremely good. But I think basically there is a good deal each of us could do if we would do it. And as you've all been told 1,000 times, one letter to a congressman, they think 100 people have the same idea. So 10 letters, I guess, equals 1,000 people. And Saddam Hussein, best argument against war that I know of is Saddam Hussein is a politician, and like all politicians, certainly all of ours, he wants to keep his job. And anyone who believes that he is stupid enough, crazy enough, to drop, if he had ever got one, or had one, to drop a nuclear bomb anywhere, and that we, in turn, wouldn't drop about 20, and what's left of Iraq would be smoking desert, is very foolish. So I think that's the best argument, if you want to make an argument about things, that it seems to me. I don't see how people could dispute that, but thank you.
And Will Forthman?
Kevin Phillips has published a book, Wealth and Democracy, and the theme of that is that American political life is dominated by big money. That's not a novel theme, and I imagine everybody in this room is aware of that. And that has an effect on what gets into the news. Gray Davis gets covered in the news, and Bill Simon gets covered in the news, because they're sponsored by big money. They're somewhat different investment groups support them. In fact, in California, the Democrats do better getting corporate money than the Republicans because they're the incumbents. Well, what can be done about that? The notion that in order to be a viable political candidate, you either have to be rich yourself or be supported by people who have access to large amounts of money, means that there's a plutocratic hurdle that must be crossed before democracy can function. And something can be done about that, and European nations have made steps in some places in this country to give public financing for public campaigns, so that if a person has a sufficient amount of support in the population that they are funding, that they can actually put out their own mailings and put out their own TV ads. In Europe, it's commonplace that political parties are subsidized by the government because they're considered to be an essential part of a democratic regime. Now, there are limits. In Sweden, a party had to have 5% of the vote in the last parliamentary election to get this subsidy, and the communists kind of fluctuated, just either above or below the 5%, and so some years they get the subsidy and some they wouldn't. So the Swedes lowered the limit to 4% so that the communists would be able to put their voice into the political debate. And that seems to be the spirit of democracy. And also in Sweden, newspapers are given money to make political coverage because the Swedes feel there should be a variety of newspapers, and if papers are covering solid political information, they're not profitable. So the Social Democratic newspaper and the Farmers newspaper in Stockholm are given a partial subsidy because they're essential to informing the public. Well, these are things other societies have done and we can do. And in fact, there is a campaign on to try and get public funding for candidates for California elections. And if they were funded, they could be heard, and if they were heard, we would have a more diverse and more democratic society.
Ralph Schroeder?
I'd like to follow up Will a little on that point. It's strange to me, sometimes the periodicals or newspapers are just unabashedly forward about what they're doing in their bias. I've had several experiences, and of course, if you notice in the secession race now, the LA Times, of course, opposes it, and the Daily News here is in favor of it. And if you look at the news coverage of both of those papers, they aren't trying to make any bones about it. You know, in their, not just in their reporting of supposed news, but in their articles, they influence the event very seriously, and they aren't getting around about it. So that's one form of bias. And another form in the political arena, I've run for Congress a few times, and usually I oppose a Democratic candidate, which, strangely enough, the Times generally supports. And in the last election, when I tried to get news from the LA Times, they wouldn't publish a word of my candidacy for Congress. But the Daily News gave me plenty of coverage. Needless to say, I hadn't got a chance to win, but the Times knew that I could take votes away from the Democrat. The Daily News knew that I could help their candidate. So I got coverage in one place and didn't get it in another. I think the whole solution, though, along with what Will said about public financing, is IRV. Nader could have got his 5 or 10% possibly of the vote if we had IRV. We have to push for that really hard. That would make a great difference in coverage, you know, and helping us.
What's IRV?
Oh, I'm sorry, instant runoff voting. That means you get a second choice when you vote. And in the case of Nader, for instance, if you voted for Ralph Nader and had a second choice, you could vote for Gore. No longer do you have to face the lesser of two evil dilemma. You can go and vote for who you want to. If that was allowed, of course, Nader would have got his 5%. He would have been forced to be in the public debates, and he'd have got his matching funds money. So I think we all ought to think about that seriously.
Next, Emil Walsick.
I was happy that this evening we were addressing the media from a global viewpoint, and that the internet, or the worldwide information highway, now is a major factor. But I would like to address British media, which apparently has a robustness that we in our Canadian and United States do not have. BBC is a nationalized entity. Can we entertain some form of nationalization that goes beyond National Public Radio or public supported television? It appears that the nationalization of the broadcast media is working on the continent, as the previous gentleman pointed out, in Germany, in France, and they are successful. They do not rely on commercial advertising income. So I would suggest that one of the alternatives that should be seriously considered is a real firm nationalization of some form, similar to BBC or Rundfunk in Germany, or, as the gentleman pointed out, in Sweden. Thank you.
Jules Boyle.
I'm from African Zaire. Actually, it's Congo now. And I've been traveling a lot. I've been in France, Europe, all over. And I've been living in the United States for just about 12 years. Talking about media, I find it a little strange because I saw what happened in September 11. That's too bad. And nobody to deserve to die the way it happens on September 11. But one thing, I talked to some friends here, and they've been saying, well, why do they hate us? It's too bad what happened. But one thing the media in the United States does better is not really educating the people about the United States government foreign policy. And that would make some time what's going on here. Yeah. And people don't know much about what's going on outside besides what's going on here. The United States government supports Mobutu, which was one of the biggest dictators in Africa, and he spent 32 years in power. And then also I found that sometimes it's hypocrite, because we're talking about democracy, why some of the biggest governments in the world, France, Belgium, they will support dictatorship in Africa, and then people keep dying over there. But also the media is there to cover up, and there's no truth at all. Nobody's saying these people are dying over there. But once again, I will repeat, it's too bad what happened to September 11, because we can't send terrorists to come killing people, innocent people. But I think we need to be fair, to tell people, this is what happened, is because maybe this is what we done to these people back there. But there's a peaceful way to find a solution. But I think the media is a big the biggest contributor to what's going on. And most of the American people accept those people who follow information. And there's not a lot of them. Most of them, when you go to San Central, Los Angeles, Campton, they don't follow TVs, and they don't know much about what's going on around the world, except the crime here. So the media is really one of the biggest contributors to what we know, but they can do a better job. Thank you.
Is Steinhardt.
I didn't come prepared to say anything, but Terry Stone, in her remarks, made a very interesting statement. She said that people should talk to each other, and I heartily agree. Today, people aren't talking to each other. They're all engrossed in those computers. They may be communicating with people, but not with each other. One reason, like for instance, going to a gasoline station, you could pump your own gas. To have the mechanism to do that. I refuse to do that because I go into the office and I talk with the person there, and when they tell me, look it, you can do it outside, you know, you don't have to come in here. I said, I know that, but I don't deal with machines, I deal with human beings. And I think that's one of the things that is happening. The technology today that we don't communicate with each other as human beings. We can do it all on www.com. We may be communicating, but are we actually talking to each other? Are we facing each other? You go into an office today, everyone is engrossed in a computer. They don't know anybody else there. I remember when I was working before I retired, we had the camaraderie of talking to each other across the aisle. We did our work. We were conscientious workers. But we were able to communicate with each other, human beings. We saw each other. Today, it seems that greed and hypocrisy motivates a lot of people. You have all of these quiz shows on the air. Jeopardy, Wheel of Fortune, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? That's all people care about, going and trying to make money. What's come over us? What's the matter with humanity talking to each other? I think that's the important thing.
Thank you, Iz. The word of mouth is our most important means of communication. It's about time to close. I want to give the phone number again to contact us as far as locations. The phone number is 818-893-9095. So we'll close. Don, did you have anything to...
Not really. I really enjoyed the comments that people made. You know, I can't help but feel that increasingly also this isolation that was spoken about drives people to listen to radio often in their cars. And it really hurts me, as I said in my presentation, that across the AM dial is a right-wing conservative pro-war mentality. Even, if you go to ABC talk radio, virtually every single one of their talk show hosts is conservative. I think one agenda that we could have is to ask why. I mean, who was it? Donahue got a television show. What is his name? Phil Donahue. I mean, everyone was like, it was a big media event. A liberal. I mean, the Americans for Democratic Action once had a steak at their dinner, so I guess he's a liberal, I don't know. But I mean, they said, this is amazing. A liberal on television actually facilitating. But if you go, as I said, out here in the valley, I think it's out here in the valley, KFI, it's the Rush Limbaugh show. Of course, we expect from him. But all of their talk show hosts ridicule anyone who calls in with a progressive idea who questions the war. And on ABC, they have a show which is the left and the right. Now, the left is represented by the female attorney Gloria Allred. You should have heard Gloria Allred on the issue of Israel and Palestine. She was more rabid than any right-winger I've ever heard. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't two sides here to these questions, but she had no openness, to absolutely no openness, to the legitimate claims of the Palestinian people. She was rabid. So here you have two giving, just vocalizing a right-wing approach on that show. And you have Elder, Larry Elder, an African-American libertarian who is there. And then you have a gay commentator on ABC who's as conservative as anyone. What is his name?
What is it?
Yes. Right, and so it's just one after another. Why couldn't we take on as a project to have someone like Will Forthman, a distinguished academic, have a two-hour talk show in which we would feel comfortable? And if we can't do that, I believe KPFK in the afternoon should compete as a venue for a call-in talk show, because people writing multiple work, and these are millions of people in Southern California, they have no option. Why couldn't we have a major campaign to say a free-thinking, open, transparent, welcoming, hospitable, environment for all ideas, and have a talk show that went for 2 hours in the afternoon? I mean, we want unscreened phone calls there. And so, I'll end by saying I left out a major issue that someone brought up, and that is the bias reflected. Can you hear me? Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm so sorry. I'll just end with this. Someone brought up the bias reflected by language and by how you present a news story. And that is very critical, and that's something we should have actually explored in the formal portion of the show, of the program, is that people who write news can write in their bias, which appears to some to be objective news reporting, but you're absolutely right. If in the way news is described and people are identified and so on, that is also a bias. I want to thank you all very much. I think the format that this group is coming up with of having a show on KPFK that will stimulate, maybe after a half-hour program, discussions around the country, around the Southern California area, I think it's a very worthwhile thing. I really appreciate having been here. I congratulate you for initiating a concept in KPFK programming. I think that will really catch on. And let's go out and hold the feet of the media to the fire. Okay, thank you very much.